Blog Talk Radio.
It's not quite Sunday night, but it's close here on the East Coast. It is Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com, and I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here with you to wrap up night one of WWE WrestleMania 37, which has just concluded with Bianca Belair defeating Sasha Banks for the SmackDown Women's Championship in what some on social media are already calling perhaps the greatest main event in WrestleMania history. Your mileage may vary, but I am excited to hear from you guys tonight on a special tonight edition of Wrestling Night in America, because we're going to be back here tomorrow night taking your phone calls and emails about night two. So this is the rare double dip for us here on Wrestling Night in America, but I am excited to be here to talk about WrestleMania with you. 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you want to talk. Press 1 to show up in the queue. If you just want to hang on the line and listen, that's okay too. If we go a little too deep into the night for you and you're not able to hang on the line, but you do want to ask a question or make a comment, you can email us at wnialivecast@gmail.com, and we'll get to your email throughout the show. We've already got three emails waiting on my attention here, so we'll get to those throughout the show. But as we do here on Wrestling Night in America with every pay-per-view, I will go down the card first to tell you what happened. And the show started. It was an ominous start. Vince McMahon and the roster were out on the stage to welcome us to WrestleMania, welcome the fans back in the stadium, back to Tampa at Raymond James Stadium specifically after more than a year away. So that was a nice touch. And then Bebe Rexha sang the America the Beautiful. And at that point, they sent it to the announcers, who announced that they were in a weather delay because of rain and lightning in the area. So being a South Floridian myself now, having lived here for 9 years, you can expect the rain whenever you don't expect it. So it's not quite the rainy season yet here in Florida, but it's getting very close. So it's always a toss-up this time of year. What we had for the about half hour they were in the delay was backstage interviews. And I'm thinking this is going to get a lot of play here tonight. The interviews were not the scripted nature that WWE usually puts on television, just because of the impromptu situation WWE found themselves in. And it revealed a lot about what kind of mic talent certain stars have or don't have. We heard from Seth Rollins. We heard from Kevin Owens. We heard from New Day, MVP. We heard from Drew McIntyre, a host of others on the evening. So it was just to fill time in an emergency situation, but it was it got us away from WWE's scripted format of interviews, and it was nice to see. And then we had the first match, which was Lashley versus Drew McIntyre for the WWE Championship. Lashley retained this, and I think this may be somewhat of a controversial finish in terms of the winner. Lashley had the Hurt Lock on Drew McIntyre. McIntyre did not submit. He went out, and the referee called for the bell. So Lashley retains. I think there were a lot of people, myself included, who were expecting Drew to win the title back here. He gets the moment he missed out on last year, getting crowned with fans in the stands. And in the end, Lashley wins. So if nothing else, a WWE, you know, affirming Lashley's title reign as something that they are behind. This was not just a transitional short-term championship reign for Lashley to get the title from Miz back to McIntyre. And now we'll have to see where this goes. How long does Lashley hold the title? Does Drew McIntyre get another opportunity? Or does, you know, is his time passed on top? I find that hard to believe, given how well he carried the ball for the last year in a very difficult situation for a top star on a brand. But, you know, we'll have to see if WWE sees someone else rising to the occasion on the Raw brand. There's not a lot to choose from, but we could also have a draft lottery sooner rather than later as well, as although nothing's been announced. Match number two was the women's gauntlet match, the tag team gauntlet. Started with Naomi and Lana against Carmella and Billie Kay. Naomi and Lana were out first. That brought out the Riot Squad. They defeated Carmella and Billie Kay. After the Riot Squad was Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, and Mandy pulled an Ultimo Dragon by slipping on the ramp and falling on her butt. The ramp was likely wet still from the weather, but Rose and Brooke were out due to the Riot Squad, so the Riot Squad picks up two victories there, and then they face Natalya and Tamina, who ended up winning. So Natalya and Tamina will get that women's tag title shot tomorrow night on night two of WrestleMania. This was this was a match that was it had its moments. It was not terrible, but it was not, I wouldn't say it reached the good level either. Drew McIntyre and Lashley as an opener, I guess I'll comment on the quality there as well, was good. It was fine. I didn't think it was excellent or anything like that. The crowd notably was behind Drew McIntyre. I know there was fear that maybe Lashley would get cheered over Drew McIntyre. That didn't seem to happen. Lashley had a small pocket of fans that were audible. There was also reports, although I'm not, my ears are not this finely tuned, but there were people reporting that WWE was sweetening the audio, even for a live crowd returning. So that, you know, when you're listening to crowd reactions and trying to analyze it, that does throw a fly in the ointment a little bit and trying to understand how the fans truly feel about wrestlers. We had match number three, Cesaro defeating Seth Rollins. Cesaro did swing Rollins for 23 rotations, or at least the count to 23, which beat the 22 he had done for free on TV. But Cesaro getting the win over Seth Rollins. Cesaro got a nice pop coming out, so that was good to see, and it was a really good match as well. Match number four, the Raw tag team titles changed hands when AJ Styles and Omos defeated New Day. This was a fun match, and Omos really looked like a talented giant. I mean, he didn't do a lot, but what he did was impressive for his size. And the match was worked a little backward because you had New Day cutting off the ring, preventing AJ Styles from making the tag. The, you know, almost gets the hot tag basically as a heel, and the crowd cheers because they've been teasing that tag all match. And I think the fans truly did want to see almost in the match and see what he brought. And I think he was impressive for what he showed. So Styles and Omos now your tag team champions, defeating New Day. Match number five was Braun Strowman against Shane McMahon in a steel cage. Braun gets the victory. He throws Shane off of the top of the cage to the ring below, then finishes him off with a power slam. At another point, Shane was on the outside climbing down off the cage to victory. However, Strowman pulled Shane's hand. Shane's hand was through the cage, waving goodbye to Strowman. Strowman grabbed it and pulled Shane and tore the side of the cage to bring Shane back in. So getting back to Braun Strowman's roots of what made him popular in the first place years ago, which was just destroying things. So that was nice to see. And to be honest, the match was not as bad as the buildup would lead you to believe, or even that you feared, with the 51-year-old Shane McMahon being involved in this match. And, you know, we've come to become familiar with, you know, Shane McMahon's stunts and things like that. So we'll have to see if this means anything for Braun Strowman going forward as a babyface. You know, Lashley did destroy Braun Strowman on Raw, so it's not an easy path for Strowman to perhaps seek a WWE title shot, but it can be done. Match number six was Bad Bunny and Damian Priest defeating The Miz and John Morrison. Bad Bunny was in the ring for most of the match, and he was impressive. You know, you don't look at Bad Bunny and necessarily see an athletic guy or a guy who would do well in the ring, but a lot of credit to The Miz and John Morrison for leading him through the match in his first match. And it was not, you know, hit a few moves and tag out, hit a few moves and tag out. It was, you know, he was in there for a 10-minute stretch there at the beginning. He did a Canadian Destroyer later on outside the ring. So he put in a lot of work here, and it was reported that he had been spending a lot of time at the Performance Center training. So not a surprise that he showed the effects of that training. Somewhat surprising that WWE, I guess, trusted him in this point, but I guess his trainers gave him high marks to Vince and whoever else was putting together this match. But it was very entertaining. Crowd liked Bad Bunny. He came out on a big rig and into the arena. So just a lot of fun, I thought, this match was. And then the main event, Bianca Belair defeating Sasha Banks. Just an absolutely tremendous match. You saw the emotion on both women's faces at the bell when it started the match. And, you know, you wonder in a high-pressure situation like that, mistakes can be made and slip-ups and perhaps hesitancy coming into play, but both women were confident. They had an absolutely tremendous match. For as good as Sasha Banks is, and she is one of, if not the best women's wrestler in the world, this seemed to me, in watching it, how it was structured, to be structured to show off Bianca Belair. And, you know, she wins, so it makes sense. But a lot of times the person who's going to lose the match gets a lot of the shine in the match. And it seemed like this was, from the moment the match started, a concerted effort to get Bianca Belair over as a star. And to be quite honest, I think it succeeded. So I didn't know how to feel about this night of WrestleMania at the end of the show. Just reading through the results and everything like that, it was a good show. It was a thumbs up. You got some positives where I think maybe you didn't necessarily think you were going to get some positives, and the stuff you thought was going to be good was really good. So that all conspires to make a pretty good show. So that's night one of WrestleMania. Again, want to hear your thoughts, 515-605-9345, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @GregMParks. You know, wrestling, even on social media, is not as popular as it once was. And I remember the days of live tweeting shows during the week when you get a lot of engagement. And it's just not that way anymore. But for tonight, for WrestleMania, and I'm assuming for tomorrow night, just a lot of people talking wrestling and a lot of people you can interact with. And that was really fun to do tonight. It was a departure from how barren the landscape generally is, even sometimes on pay-per-view night. So if you don't already, follow me @GregMParks. I'll be tweeting tomorrow night as well during WrestleMania. A couple reminders for those who are new. I'm sure we have some people who are checking out Wrestling Night in America for the first time. First of all, thank you. Hope you're back tomorrow night and in future weeks, because we are here every Sunday night for Wrestling Night in America, talking the big shows in pro wrestling, not just WWE. But a couple rules to abide by here. We have a lot of people on hold that we want to get through in a reasonable amount of time. So please limit your questions or comments to 3 total, and we'll keep a good pace here. And we are a PG show, so if you could watch the language, we'd really appreciate that here at PW Torch. So pwtorch.com/govip, by the way, is where you can go to become a member of PW Torch, and no better time to become a member than WrestleMania season. Without further ado, we go to the phones, and leading us off, as he tends to do on pay-per-view nights, it is Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, good to hear from you first again tonight. I'm interested to get your thoughts on night one of WrestleMania.
Yeah, Greg, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I got to listen to you and Frank on talking about WrestleMania 27 on his show, and I talked about that last night with Wade, and it was, like I said, really good. I really enjoyed it, even though it wasn't a good WrestleMania, but I enjoyed you guys talking about it. So there you go.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, this was a very, very good. I did not catch what you said at the beginning about Lashley and Drew. I did not see that yet, so I'm going to get off here once I talk to you, but so I'm excited to go back and watch that because I got home a little bit later than I wanted to. But overall, from what I saw, the show was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. It was nice to see the fans there. That was cool. Whatever, you know, as many of them as there were, that was cool to see. The reactions were good. First of all, I want to say about the matches, I am glad Cesaro got the win. I think I said that last Wade and Javier, I really think he needed to get a win against Seth, who is a main man. He's already done a lot in WWE. It doesn't hurt him to lose a match like that. And I think this is the one chance for Cesaro where I think he can get a decent push from this. And like you said, the fans loved him and they're into him, and his athleticism is just so fun to watch. And I thought it was a great match, and I'm glad to see him get the win. So that was the first thing I was going to bring up. Second, I'm with you on I wanted to talk about the Bad Bunny match, which I didn't think I would initially, because it was good. Bad Bunny did a really good job for what he has. It, to be in there that long, was impressed by him. It wasn't the greatest, but it, from an athlete who doesn't come to WWE and is new and a musician, that is pretty fantastic what he did. But I wanted to ask you, the only thing I didn't like about that, the match at the end, was I wish Priest would have had been able to do his finisher and then have Bad Bunny, if he's going to win the match, because I still think ultimately you want to show what Damian Priest can do, and he did a little bit, but again, not like he should have. Did you like that they did that? Should Priest have put his finisher on and then have Bad Bunny win if he's going to do that?
I think that there's a case to be made for that. I think the match had to be a balance of showcasing Bad Bunny, because he is the person at this point people are tuning in to see of the match, but also keeping in mind that Damian Priest is the full-time wrestler, and he's the guy you're wanting to get that rub from Bad Bunny to. So I think you have to balance it. I think it balanced more heavily toward the side of showcasing Bad Bunny in this match. And who knows? The relationship between Bad Bunny and Damian Priest may continue on TV. Bad Bunny may be around for after WrestleMania. We don't know what his schedule is going to be and what his status with WWE is going to be going forward. So there could be a time later down the road where we see more of an even split, with Priest maybe becoming a more dominant personality, both outside and inside the ring, whereas it's not just Bad Bunny carrying things from those ends. But, yeah, I absolutely agree. I think you can make an argument that maybe not just in the finish, but overall in the match, you can take a step back and take the big picture view that, you know, maybe Priest should have done more in that match, more memorable, because he is the guy that WWE is going to be banking on. He is the full-time guy that's probably going to get a push coming out of this.
Yeah, I agree. And two quick things I had left, and I'll let all the other callers get in and see what they think, and I'll go back tomorrow and listen to it. With AJ, I was fine with AJ and Omos winning, because I'm, you know, kind of just over New Day a little bit. With Omos, yeah, I did like a little that he showed. I guess knowing they're not, Vince isn't big into tag teams, like, what do you think might be next for them, or where they might go with them? How long do you think they might hold the tag team titles, even though usually they don't, teams don't hold them for very long? But I was wondering where you thought they might go with that, because I'm intrigued what they do with Omos. I mean, him and AJ's fun. I do enjoy them for what they are. And then the last was, again, I just wanted to kind of say what you said at the end there with Sasha and Bianca. Number one, I love the true emotion that especially Bianca showed. I really just love the realness of that and the genuineness of that. And I just love what Bianca's doing. And I want to hear what you kind of thought about that. But just going about the match, it was, like you said, the athleticism of her carrying Sasha up the steps, just love the athleticism. And just, I thought the match was going to be good anyway. I think we all did, because of how good Sasha is. But Bianca needed to win, and I'm glad she did. I'm curious to see where they go with her. But the match was tremendous. It was definitely at least 4 stars for sure. It was really, really good. And Greg, I want to hear what you thought on those couple things. And I appreciate all you do for the Torch. I appreciate, you know, I hope I can call tomorrow. I've actually got a friend watching WrestleMania with me at my apartment tomorrow night, so I don't know if I'll be able to call in. I'll try to email you, let you know kind of what I'm thinking of the show. But I just appreciate all you do, man. Thank you for taking my call, as always.
Absolutely. Sean, always good to hear from you. I appreciate the kind words. So to the first question you had, AJ and Omos, what's next for them? Where do they go? I think the length of time they're going to be together is dependent upon how ready, or when he's ready, in terms of Omos getting a singles push, because I think that's inevitably where this is going to go. Omos is going to break away from AJ, and he'll get a singles push, perhaps at some point. And it's really dependent upon when WWE thinks he's ready for that, because I don't think – if they think he's ready from either an in-ring or a character point of view or whatever the case may be, they're not going to keep him together with AJ in a tag team if they think they can make him a single star. And you said, Sean, that WWE is never really heavily invested in tag teams, so there's no incentive in their minds to keep them together as a tag team if they believe Omos has singles potential. So I think whenever they make that decision, whenever they have room on the card for him as a singles guy to be pushed up the card, that's when that decision will be made. And then the emotion in the main event, I mean, I think that's part of what made it so attractive as a match, is the emotion. Two African-American women main eventing WrestleMania for the first time. The emotion you saw in their faces when the match began, the reaction from the crowd at the beginning, throughout the match, at the end for Bianca Belair's celebration, I don't think you can discount that and the effect that it has. I think it adds to the match. So as good as the match was from a technical point of view, however you want to grade it, the emotion made it that much better. So I certainly think that played a huge part in the success of that match and how fondly that match will be looked at years from now, because this is going to be a match that I think fans reflect on for years to come. So Sean kicks us off there with his thoughts on WrestleMania. Again, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. We'll go to our next caller. It is the 410 area code, Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America. Good to hear from you tonight.
Always good to talk to you, Greg. Thank you so much for taking my call on this lovely evening. Listen, I think WrestleMania Night 1 exceeded expectations. What about you, Greg?
Yeah, I think on paper you looked at a couple matches that were going to stand out, Lashley and Drew, Cesaro and Rollins, and then, you know, you didn't really know what you were going to get from Omos, but I think there was kind of interest in seeing what he brought to the table. I think a lot of people wrote off Braun and Shane. They wrote off the Bad Bunny and Damian Priest tag match, and then they thought Bianca Belair and Banks would be good. So I think this exceeded expectations based on what you would expect on paper.
Yes, and it was such a historic night for multiple reasons. Now, we all know that this was the first time two black women main evented a WrestleMania, and it was just an awesome sight. You could tell that Bianca was literally holding back the tears. She was crying. She, you know, and Sasha had to kind of pull her in, the ring general that Sasha is, you know, for them to start the match. After they ended up pushing and shoving each other into the ropes, then that's when they got down to business. It was 16 minutes of nonstop action, and I'm just so happy for Bianca. It was her crowning moment. You know, it's ironic that, you know, she never became the NXT Women's Champ, but in a short period of time, she has set the trail ablaze in the women's division on SmackDown, so I can only expect greater things are yet ahead for her. Now, moving down the card from the main event on down, I am so impressed, as Sean stated, I am so impressed with Bad Bunny. I mean, from the double leg takedown to the forearm shivers to the hurricanrana to the DDT off the top rope, from the moonsault off the top rope onto the outside to the Canadian Destroyer, which ultimately led to the finish. I'm just so overwhelmingly impressed with his skills, man. And you can tell, as Booker T said, he was training his butt off for months at the Performance Center, and it showed. And, you know, he came in on the 18 rig. You know, it was just amazing. You know, I just think that he really impressed a lot of people tonight. And, you know, we saw an outstanding performance from Pat McAfee last summer for NXT, but I think he outdid his performance. What do you think?
Whew, that's a high bar. McAfee being in a singles match, I think, upped the level of difficulty. But then again, you take into account Bad Bunny. He's doing it in front of a larger audience than Pat McAfee did it in front of, both live and watching on television. So the pressure may be a little higher in that regard. You know, I tend to think McAfee was a little more natural and a little smoother, which probably comes from him coming from the athletic world. But, you know, coming out as a musician, I think perhaps that makes Bad Bunny's performance even more impressive that he was not a trained athlete necessarily at the level that Pat McAfee was. So I'm kind of talking myself in circles here, contradicting myself at each point. So I guess I will land, as I usually do, in the middle and just say they were both really super impressive performances.
Yes, I agree. And I'm happy for Cesaro, as you and Sean have already discussed. So I don't want to go into that because I know you have a lot of callers behind me, but I do have to put emphasis on the WWE heavyweight title match. I had been predicting for the last 5 weeks that Lashley was on fire and that the WWE did not build this man up to tear him down. So I was happy with the result. It was a very competitive match, and the right man won. I mean, I know a lot of people expected Drew to win before the crowd at WrestleMania because of the lack of crowd at last year's WrestleMania. But he had already held the title twice. Lashley is on fire. I think it's his time. I'm happy that he retained the belt, but I'm also happy in the manner in which he retained, simply because Drew was heavily protected, Greg, by referee stoppage due to him passing out. So he didn't tap out. He did not get pinned. He passed out. So that gives Drew an opportunity to ask for a rematch or, you know, to still be in the top one or two contenders for Lashley's title. Now, I'm going to go back to what I said to Zach and Doc Bruce over a week ago after one of the post shows, that I believe that Brock Lesnar will soon show up and challenge Lashley. The time is now. You know, Lashley has said that he was promised a match with Brock 2 years ago. It never happened. And, you know, we haven't seen Brock since the pandemic, you know. So I think this would be the opportunity to build a new number one contender to Lashley's title. I can see that being Brock. What are your impressions about that?
Man, I really think that's intriguing. I think that Lesnar versus Lashley is a match that I'd like to see. I think you're right that Lashley has been built up over the last really almost a year, probably 9 to 10 months, to the point where, you know, he is a legitimate option for Brock Lesnar. I mean, if you're going to, you know, WWE has always been very careful about who they're going to use against Brock Lesnar. They want it to be top guys because Lesnar does not come cheap. So I think Lashley has reached that level where it makes sense for him to be an opponent for Lesnar. And I mean, you look at the landscape of Raw, and as I said before, things could change if you, you know, if you do some kind of superstar shakeup in the coming weeks and months. But the landscape of Raw is not heavy on real top babyfaces to challenge Lashley. So you bring Brock Lesnar in, without Paul Heyman, because Heyman's on SmackDown doing his thing with Roman Reigns, it wouldn't make a lot of sense for him to be, you know, a completely different person with Brock Lesnar in terms of how he acts. So you could bring Brock Lesnar as a babyface, maybe, and have him fight Lashley and, you know, maybe even put Lashley over. So if you don't go to Drew McIntyre next and have McIntyre get a rematch, then I think there's a conversation to be had about using Brock Lesnar.
Totally agree with you, Greg. Totally agree. And I also can see Drew going over to SmackDown at some point in the next couple of months when they have a superstar shakeup and they can reignite that scenario with him and the Tribal Chief from what we saw at Survivor Series. I think the fans would be clamoring for another encounter between the two. Thank you so much, Greg, for taking my call. I look forward to talking to you again on tomorrow night, and continue to go pwtorch.com/goVIP. Have a good night.
Appreciate it, Reverend Keith. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and I do hope that we're able to connect tomorrow night after night two of WrestleMania. So if you've just gotten on the line in the last 5-10 minutes, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is PW Torch Wrestling Night in America. We've crossed midnight here on the East Coast, so we're now into Sunday, April 11th, 2021, but we started on Saturday night, April 10th, 2021. We're taking your phone calls and emails about WrestleMania. We're taking your emails at WNIALivecast@gmail.com. We're taking your phone calls, 515-605-9345. Got a lot of both to get through, so we'll go to our first email of the night. This is from Chris from Milwaukee. He says, "Hi, Greg. I'm writing this during the weather delay, and I can't help but think this is a blessing in disguise for one reason. These promos are obviously unscripted, and they are so much more raw and real. Drew's in particular about the pandemic taking it away from him last year and the weather trying to this year was absolutely fantastic. If I was in the arena, I know it would have made me cheer for him even more. Do you think there's any possibility of them loosening up the rules of unscripted promos after this? The performers can clearly handle it and do much better promos without the scripts." I think that's everybody's hope, that these wrestlers who had to cut these organic promos without time to memorize a word-for-word script, that the chains will be loosened on them a little bit. I don't have a lot of confidence that that's going to happen. I think, you know, WWE is very rigid in its ways in terms of how it does things, how it produces things. And ultimately, I think this is just kind of a blip on the radar, unfortunately. But I would love to see, and this is something I think most fans would love to see and would have wanted to see since WWE started doing this, see a little bit more of the personality in the wrestlers. Because nobody has a better handle on their character than the wrestler themselves, who has to live it, you know, back when they were doing house shows and traveling all the time, almost 24 hours a day sometimes, as opposed to a writer who's writing for two or three different characters and they both sound the same. So, but I just don't feel like that was enough to make WWE completely wholesale change the way they do things. It was something to get them through a time, but I don't think it was enough to make them look in the mirror and question how they do things, unfortunately. So we go back to the phones here. It is Darrell from Georgia, the 478 area code. Always love to hear from Darrell. Welcome to the show, Darrell. What did you think of night one of WrestleMania?
How you doing, Greg? Night one of WrestleMania was great. I'm going to get down to the boogie. I'm going to talk about the first match and Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley. I feel like now they're setting up for a perfect opportunity that you can set down the line depending on what happened on night two where you get Drew versus Roman. What are you thinking about that?
Yeah, when Reverend Keith in the last call brought up the possibility of Drew moving to SmackDown in a superstar shakeup, the first thing I thought of was, Drew versus Roman. You know, we'll revisit that. That was discussed several months ago. So, you know, that... To me, that's more of a next year's WrestleMania type match, if you build it the right way. So I think that eventually you do that match, but I think you've got to spend a lot of time building it. And maybe maybe 3 months from now, we'll look at where Drew McIntyre is and he's not, you know, he's back down the card or something like that. I don't necessarily see that happening, but it's a possibility that I think has to be talked about with him losing here, even though he was protected. But, yeah, Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns, I mean, right now, given where their characters are, Drew is the top babyface star on Raw, even in losing tonight. Roman Reigns, the top heel star on SmackDown. I think if you're talking today, April 11th, of moving Drew to Roman, forgetting about what could happen in the future, I think that is a big enough match that you might want to do at WrestleMania next year.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, moving on to the main event, you had Sasha versus Bianca, and I love that match. To me, that was the third best match of the weekend, of this week so far, depending on the two matches from TakeOver, and that's the third best match. I'm seeing that if you go off the rumors, you got Ronda Rousey coming back, and you can have a potential match between her and Bianca Belair. That's what I'm seeing so far, and hopefully they can build up to that, because right now on SmackDown, they don't really have too many heels who can challenge Bianca Belair. What do you think about that?
The Rousey name is interesting. I think she's going to be someone who's just going to be brought up in perpetuity until the end of time, until she either comes back or she knocks down any rumors of her coming back. You know, we've seen what looks like her training for a comeback. She's not shut the door on coming back at some point. So this is speculation that we're going to have to answer quite often. So, you know, you look at Ronda Rousey and where you could use her. It makes more sense, I think, against Bianca Belair than against, say, Asuka, top women's star on Raw. You've seen Ronda Rousey already with Becky Lynch and Charlotte. There doesn't seem to be a lot of women, unless you do Sasha Banks at some point. There just doesn't seem to be a lot of women who right now are in a position where, you know, it's sort of the same thing with Brock Lesnar. You know, you're not bringing Brock Lesnar back to face a mid-carder. You're not going to bring Ronda Rousey back to face Peyton Royce. So there's very few women on the Raw or SmackDown women's roster who seem like they would be ready for Ronda Rousey. Maybe Rhea Ripley after tomorrow night, depending on how things go. She's a name you got to think of. So, I think that's a possibility, and I think you nailed it, Darrell. The SmackDown women's division is, you know, they've got Sasha Banks, they've got Bianca Belair, they've got Bayley, but beyond that, you know, Carmella has had her run. Doesn't feel like that's a long-term thing with her on top of the women's division. There are some others that you could take advantage of. You know, Natalia's in a tag team right now and getting a tag title shot, so she doesn't seem like someone who's in for a singles push anytime soon. So, you know, I think it sort of the same thing with Lesnar, looking at the lay of the land for Lashley. Same thing with Bianca Belair. If you're not going back to Sasha Banks for a rematch, I think it's not completely out of the realm of possibility to bring up the name Ronda Rousey.
Yes, sir. That's what I'm thinking going ahead, but I'm waiting to see. Now, my last thing would be that Seth versus Cesaro match. I'm liking the pop that Cesaro got. Also, I think him and McIntyre got the biggest pop of the night, and that's a good sign for McIntyre going against Roman and stuff like that. But Cesaro, I'm liking the pop that he got, and I think that's a number one contendership match, depending on who come out as the title holder on night two on SmackDown. So I'm waiting to see what that has, but how do you see about that going and the potential of them being the number, Cesaro being the number one contender?
That's interesting. I'm hesitant to get on board with that only because we've been fooled so many times with Cesaro. Just when we think that he has a really good match and maybe he's impressed somebody in power, they don't capitalize on it. So there is a real danger in getting caught up in that trap again, thinking, well, maybe this is the time that WWE is going to get behind Cesaro. Nothing wrong with getting your hopes up as long as you do it with the understanding that this has happened before and it hasn't amounted to anything. But I think that Cesaro has all the tools. I am on the Cesaro train. I absolutely believe in him as someone who could be a major player on one of the brands. So if you were to tell me, hey, this is the plan, he's going to be number one contender, I'm on board for that. I haven't seen evidence that WWE is actually going to pull that trigger. So I can't even say, Darrell, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I will hope that tonight, whether it's the combination of the match quality with Seth Rollins, you know, the audible cheers that he got from the Tampa faithful tonight, maybe it will have started some gears turning in Vince's mind or someone else's mind, a key decision maker, to get behind him with a real substantial push. But again, I don't have a lot of confidence in that.
So because they never let Cesaro have a singles match, and they built that up and how he performed in that match and everything like that. That's why I think that's something that he'll be able to get, and they can push that off. So I'm willing to see what going on that. But, you know, that's everything that I want to push with you. And, you know, Greg, you do great work. You know, me and YouTube people, who work in the school system. So, hey, I'm big up on my fellas who work in the school system. And if you need any help tomorrow and somebody to go the distance with you, hey, man, give me a call, man. I'll call in anyway. So I'm willing to be in it with you all the way. So just let me know. But, hey, this was a good show, man, and this whole week has been great. So I'm proud of what they did and everything, even with the rain delay. So I'll let you get the other callers, and, hey, let me know if you need any help. And everybody, join in and listen to Greg.
All right. Thank you, Darrell, as always. Love to hear from you. Appreciate the offer. We'll go to the next phone call here. It is the 508 area code. 508, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Nate Lennox T, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going, Nate? Good to hear from you. What do you think of WrestleMania?
All right, so I'm going to talk WrestleMania for a bit. First off, Greg, I just want to say good to finally talk to you. I don't think we've actually spoken before.
That's true.
second, I wanted to touch on Reverend Keith's analysis of Pat McAfee against Bad Bunny. I just want to say I certainly appreciate Bad Bunny and everything he pulled out here tonight. I think Pat McAfee's performance is just a little bit better, but where you were talking about kind of like the pressure of WrestleMania and everything like that, I'm kind of like right in the middle too, but I just want to say, I think Pat McAfee might have been just a tad above Bad Bunny tonight. Then I also need to just say my black and gold heart is swelling with pride with Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair in the main event. And Bianca definitely deserved it. So happy to see that. My last thing, and I will let you get to other callers here, but the last thing I wanted to say is the main event tonight with Sasha and Bianca kind of left us with a really happy go home taste in our mouth. Like it was a great moment, great to see these two women in the main event, and awesome to see her win the title. Now I was listening to Javier and Wade on the post show after SmackDown last night, and Javier was kind of talking about he was thinking that Daniel Bryan may end up winning tomorrow night to have the crowd go home happy to end WrestleMania. Where they did that go home tonight, I'm wondering if we may end up, and I'm kind of seeing this, I was talking with a buddy of mine too, and he's in agreement with me, we may end up seeing Edge win tomorrow. And I'm kind of wondering what you're thinking about that.
When I talked to Frank Pettiani for WWE Then and Now earlier in the week, which I heartily endorse, I was going to mention that actually when Sean brought it up, the first caller, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Frank, a PWTorch.com contributor. He's someone I have as a guest on Wrestling Night in America on occasion, and we sat down and talked about WrestleMania 27 from 2011 and as well as previewing WrestleMania this year. So Edge was the one name that I sort of cast aside as someone who I didn't think really was in the conversation for winning that match, and I set forward the reasons I thought Roman Reigns was going to win, and I set forward the reasons I think Daniel Bryan was going to win. I haven't seen a lot yet to change my mind on that. I don't know if Bianca Belair winning and quote-unquote sending the fans home happy tonight would have any effect on the main event of tomorrow night. The idea that Daniel Bryan would want to send a Daniel Bryan win would want to send the fans home happy. Is WWE less apt to do that because they sent the fans home happy tonight and they would do a heel, whether it's Roman Reigns or Edge winning tomorrow night? I don't know if that changes the equation at all for them booking wise, but I'm kind of curious as to what makes you side with Edge there for a win tomorrow night.
So I've been kind of thinking for a little bit that the kind of like the whole Adam Copeland character, because that was really kind of what he's kind of settled into. He hasn't been the rated R superstar. He's really just kind of been himself dialed up a little bit. And I've been kind of thinking that really hasn't been latching on to the mainstream audience. Personally, like, I've loved it. I'm a big Adam Copeland fan. I just kind of I like him, his personality, his podcast, things like that. I enjoyed what he brought to the table outside of the wrestling business. And when he started bringing that into his character, I was personally enjoying that, but I didn't think it was necessarily hitting with the mainstream audience. So I was kind of thinking we were going to start to see some shades of the Rated R Superstar come out a couple weeks before we saw that actually happen. And I'm kind of just thinking that that whole story arc might end up with a culmination and a coronation with the title at WrestleMania to kind of almost bring back a mega heel in the Rated R Superstar. Maybe it's just fantasy booking for me because, like, Edge has been one of my guys forever. But that's just something that was making sense to me. A couple of my friends talking about it, and hadn't had a chance to talk to Tom or Kelly about it today anyway. But it made sense to him, too, and I was driving back from my – I was actually with a friend watching wrestling tonight. I was driving back, and I'm like, I'll throw on Wrestling America and see what Greg thinks. So.
Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for that, and I don't think you can ever rule out of hand WWE going with a potentially off-the-wall winner. I just don't see the benefit of Edge winning when he's a heel. I think that the benefit of Daniel Bryan as a babyface winning is all of a sudden you see Roman Reigns, who has basically only played this character as a champion. So he has been on his high horse the entire time, and if he loses that title, I think there's intrigue in seeing how does he react? How does he treat Paul Heyman? How does he treat Jey Uso as a non-champion? You know, what are his promos like when he's no longer the head of the table on SmackDown?
Yeah.
And so I think that's easier to do when you have a babyface as Daniel Bryan as champion as opposed to having Edge as champion. I think that's a little harder for that character to play off of as a heel if you're going to keep Edge heel. So, you know, that's kind of my thing on Daniel Bryan winning. But again, I think with the way WWE books and things like that, you can't disregard any possibility out of hand.
Fair enough. No, that works for me. I will let you take other calls, and appreciate you taking.
Well, Nate,
and,
before you go,
I've
got you on the line. I want you to plug PWT Talks NXT. I want you to plug what you do for the Torch, and
sure.
We got a big audience listening, so hopefully some of them will pick up your show on NXT. And it was a big week for NXT with the takeover, two-night takeover earlier in the week too. So I'm sure you guys covered that in depth as well. So maybe some people will want to check that out.
Yeah, so actually it was last week, Tom Stoup and I were actually here on Wrestling Night in America. It was actually last Sunday. We did a preview of the two-night takeover event, which was, I thought was a great event overall. Wednesday night we're actually right here, same phone number, 515-605-9345, right about half an hour after NXT goes off the air. We will be talking that particular episode of NXT and kind of same format here. And actually we hear from a lot of you guys, Darrell, good to hear from you, Keith and Sean, all you guys. So definitely keep calling in. I also write the NXT hits and misses, as well as the alt perspective SmackDown report alongside Wade's every Friday night. So check out the stuff I do.
Excellent. Thanks, Nate, for calling. It's good to talk to you finally.
Yeah, you too, Greg. Take care, man. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too. All right, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails. We've got about three people on hold, so if you do want to call up, it's not too late. And we will get to a new email here. This is from Roy from California. He says, "Hello, Greg. Hope you're doing well. Must say, I was surprised at Lashley retaining at Mania, let alone getting cheered for it. I think if Drew hadn't won the title twice in a year, it would have made sense for him to regain. I personally think just for the time being, Drew just step away from the title picture as he's being booked like the second coming of John Cena. Who are some names you think Lashley could face until they do Drew Lashley again? Take care." Thank you, Roy. You know, we mentioned Brock Lesnar as a possibility. You could do something with Sheamus, although we've already seen Sheamus versus Lashley. And Sheamus is back to being heel again, taking on Riddle tomorrow night. But there's not a lot of top babyfaces on Raw that you could see stepping up and challenging, unless you know, you go completely Hurt Business, you know, imploding, and you dare do a Cedric Alexander-Lashley match or a Shelton Benjamin-Lashley match, which neither of them have been as a single star, even as a tag team, let alone as a singles wrestler, has been portrayed at the level of Lashley. Lashley did get some cheers. I don't think it was overwhelming by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think Rory brings up a point that it would have been much for McIntyre to win the title for a third time in a calendar year. The second win was, you know, over Orton was seemed unnecessary at the time, and I think it kind of turned out that way. I hate to make that John Cena comparison. I really do. I think we're still a long way from that. You know, John Cena was on top for, God, a decade maybe or close to it. This has been a year for Drew McIntyre. And WWE's MO has always been to book a strong babyface. That doesn't mean they're John Cena. You know, I think the backlash that John Cena received was, I think there was the idea that he was not as good in the ring. That's not really a concern for Drew McIntyre. I think there was a concern that John Cena got too corny. That really hasn't been a concern for Drew McIntyre. So, yes, they're both booked as strong babyfaces, but I don't see the comparisons extending beyond that to the point where, you know, there was no backlash to Drew McIntyre from the live audience tonight, at least none that I've heard. So I don't think that's a concern. So I think that, yeah, you could make the argument that maybe set him aside for a little while, cool him off to heat him back up again. But I don't think it's for the reason that, oh, he's becoming too much like John Cena. Back to the phones. We are at the 802 area code, 802. You're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Greg, it's Nick from Brattleboro, Vermont. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Nick. Thank you for calling in. Good to hear from you again. What did you think of WrestleMania?
Damn that rain. It's keeping you up late tonight.
Well, actually, you know, when the rain hit, here I am thinking, oh, my goodness, this is going to extend the show another half hour. We're going to be into, you know, Sunday late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. But, you know, even from the rain delay,
tight.
The show, they did. It was only about 3 hours. I was impressed.
Just to warn everybody, I looked at the weather for tomorrow, and it's like they've got thunder and lightning from like 6 till 10. So we could be in for another adventure tomorrow. But
this is where the folks at WWE earn their money by coming up tonight with a backup plan for tomorrow. So they have something that they can do other than just having wrestlers cut random promos. Maybe they do it again.
Build a roof real quick. So what I wanted to comment on is a couple things that picked me off, and it wasn't at all about wrestling. It seemed to me that they moved almost everybody down to the floor seats and squished them in because they showed no pictures of the bowls. And it just kind of, and I know Florida is wide open and stuff, but there's still 6,000 to 7,000 cases a day down your way. And it just made me, I mean, I'm getting my second shot of vaccine next week. And I'm just like, I was going, oh, God, no, wrong message. Show people apart and enjoying their apartness. But, you know, and I don't know how you feel. I don't know what your politics are or anything like that. But it really kind of was like, really, you're going to show these people shoulder to shoulder? But, I mean, that was just, that's just a comment, you know. I found it offensive.
I'm getting my second shot Wednesday, so I'm
okay,
ready for that. thank you. I did notice that. I guess it didn't, I wasn't conscious of it, but I did notice that there did not, you know, when they were talking about selling tickets, that they were going to sell them in pods and they were going to have social distances, whatever like that. And then, you know, just thinking about the camera shots of the floor seats and everything like that, and it was like, there's a lot of people in pretty tight quarters there. And they did their best to shoot fans who were masked, but they caught a lot of fans without masks on, and I'm like, you know, I think they're trying hard to not catch them on camera when they're doing crowd shots, but it almost seemed like they couldn't. I mean, you couldn't help it. They were everywhere.
Well,
so
people are nuts. They wear a mask and then, oh, I'm going to yell, so now I'm going to take the mask off and yell, which is, you know, just the wrong thing to do.
Right.
My other
maybe somebody who was there would have a better perspective of it. I'm kind of interested to see some audio or some reports written of people who were actually in attendance tonight, just to kind of see what their take was on how close the audience was, what the mask wearing was like, you know, what percentage of the crowd actually wore it for the duration and things like that.
Yeah, just we're so close, man. We're just so close.
Yeah.
The other thing is now I don't know if you're a big football fan or not. It's like I'm a New Yorker originally, New York Giants fan, and I would always turn the audio off on the network broadcast and listen to the local radio guy. Sometimes it was a little weird because it wasn't synced up exact, but the announcing today really annoyed me. They were in such hyper WWE mode that it was like, okay, we know there's people there, that's great, and we know this is the biggest event of the year, but it was like, chill a little bit, be a little bit more subtle. and I know WWE doesn't do that, but it really irritated me tonight, and I was just wondering if you kind of felt they were even so much more over the top.
I guess when you watch as much WWE as I do and as others do, maybe that's you're sort of immune to it and you're just it's kind of white noise at this point. I did think they were a little better in the main event. I think that there were times in the main event where they just kind of let things breathe a little more because of the gravity of the match and the emotion. The announcers didn't need to sell the emotion. The fans could see it on the faces of the women. So I think they were a little more reserved for the main event. That's something I did notice for at least a time there at the beginning. So I will give them credit for that. But, I mean, the announcing just sort of washes over me. I just largely tune it out more so than anything.
I'm not quite there
so,
yet.
it wouldn't surprise me if you're exactly right that WrestleMania being in front of a crowd can energize the announce team just as much as it can energize wrestlers in the ring. So it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case.
Yeah. Last point, and this is in general, I enjoyed the show tonight. I thought it was tight, as I said, and it was good. And I just want to – everyone's giving Bianca a lot of props, and she deserves them. But I also want to highlight Sasha. On the two huge Bianca moves, when she's carrying Sasha up the stairs, I used to do dance, and one of the reasons you can lift someone when you're doing dance is that they contract their core and actually make themselves lighter. And if you noticed Sasha, she had her legs crossed. She was perfectly straight, you know, which makes it so much easier to lift someone. Not discounting Bianca's actual strength and the ability to core balance that weight as you're walking upstairs and stuff, but Sasha was great there. And then on the spots in the ring where Bianca kept lifting her up into a stalled suplex, like I think it was four or five times, but if you watch, like, from the second one on, it was Bianca moving up and then Sasha doing a leg raise. Again, impressive core to sell that move. I mean, in other words, to sell both of those moves, not only does Bianca have to do it, but Sasha, listen, that applies to The Miz and to John Morrison. You don't do that Canadian Destroyer with Bad Bunny unless it's John Morrison who's flipping his hips and getting over like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think sometimes as wrestling fans, we look at the person who's, quote, doing the move and forget about the person who's really doing the move, which is the one who's taking the move. And I just thought Sasha was great tonight.
This was a show, and I think you hit on the two main examples of it. This was a show where it really exposed how much of a – truly, and you mentioned dance, how much of a dance professional wrestling is, in that it takes two, or sometimes four, but, you know, usually two, because it is a partnership. You are working together in the ring, and we saw that in the tag match that you mentioned with Bad Bunny and The Miz and John Morrison, sort of leading him through the match so that he could look as impressive as he did. And Miz and Morrison deserve a lot of credit for that. And I think the examples you gave of Sasha Banks with Bianca Belair were perfect. It was really noticeable to me on the suplex spots where she was doing the slingshot suplex, and Sasha was really helping straightening the legs at times and stuff like that, so that they both didn't topple over. And yeah, it looked hard, you know. So I think this show was a good example of how much cooperation is needed to make even one person look good, let alone two.
Well, and the same with New Day with Omos. I mean, if Xavier and Kofi weren't as good as they are and able to and selfless enough to sell and to hop around the way they do, for him, he would have looked totally stiff and useless. But, you know, it's and I just, that's when I'm watching, that's what I tend to watch and enjoy, which is the, because I've done dance, I've done karate, I've done, you know, all these things where you've got to depend on the other person, like in karate, not to hit you in the nose. You know, if you're having a exhibition. And tonight I was just very impressed.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you're listening, Sasha, good job.
Oh, she's a big listener of Wrestling Night in America.
But anyway, I will let you go, and if I'm not too exhausted, maybe I'll give you a call tomorrow. And as always, you do a great job on this. So, you know, you're doing it
Thank
alone,
you.
and you're just doing fabulous.
Appreciate it.
And
Nick,
like,
yeah, I'll be here. Yeah. Oops.
Oh, like the rail. If you need someone to be a partner, I'm all ears. You can get me through the torch.
Thank you. Excellent. Yeah, it's always a pleasure to do this. We're here each and every Sunday night. So for those who are listening maybe for the first time or who are infrequent listeners, Wrestling Night in America every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, and we talk the big shows in pro wrestling. So we look ahead and preview some of the major pay-per-views coming up for AEW, for WWE, for NXT, for on occasion New Japan and Impact Wrestling. I usually have a co-host from the Torch family joining me as a co-host, taking your phone calls and emails. So if you're new to this, hope you tune in each and every Sunday night. We really appreciate you participating and just being a part of it, even if that's just listening. So we'll go to another email here. This is Chris from Reading, Pennsylvania. He says, Bianca, Sasha was by far the match of the night. Great call finishing with that match. Can you think of a celeb who was as big as Bad Bunny who also did as well as him? Stephen Amell was better in the ring, but nowhere near on the same level. So I'll start with – there's a last question here he has, but I'll start with answering Bianca, Sasha. And the decision to put it in as the main event. I had no problem with the idea of putting that in the main event. My problem was more with the buildup, not being building up a main event program. When you've got Reginald, when you've got Nia Jax, when you've got Shayna Baszler all involved, when you've got Bianca and Sasha losing falls to them, that was not the buildup of a WrestleMania Night 1 main event. So I think that was the frustration for me more than anything else. Not that I didn't have confidence that they could be in that main event slot and perform to the level of a main event slot. It was just frustration with WWE and how they built that up. WWE, to be honest, hasn't gotten a lot of big stars the level of Bad Bunny to wrestle, so it's a hard comparison. But certainly he would be in the upper echelon of in-ring competitors, period. And then if you want to take it a step further and say, you know, major celebrities, then certainly he would be at the top of that list. And then finally, Christopher says, my last question is about Drew being distracted by MVP. Do you think Drew has shown in his character that he can get distracted like that? Lashley got distracted in the last bout for the title, and now Drew gets distracted in this one. Do you think they finally have a rubber match where we just see someone go over 100% clean? The MVP distraction was a little thing. So that was another out that McIntyre had in addition to the out of not tapping out in the Hurt Lock. So I think there is the possibility that they could have another match just by the way Drew was protected. I think if you really wanted to go full bore with Lashley and move him to somebody else right away, there's no reason you don't beat Drew clean. Other than WWE's, you know, their booking of heels is to, even when they should be going over clean, it's to have them cheat or have the babyface be distracted or whatever the case may be. But that, I think, you know, Chris is sort of talking me into another Drew versus Lashley match. I was sort of 50-50 on it heading into this, and I'm now 60-40, maybe 70-30 on another rematch. So we've got a couple more emails to get to. We've got one more phone call, so if you want to hop on the line before we close, we're going to be done as soon as we run out of stuff to talk about. So we'll go to the 111 area code. So this is a Skype or international call here. If you hear the click, you're on the air, 111, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Greg. This is Hayden from London, Ontario.
Hayden, good to hear from you. What did you think of WrestleMania tonight?
Yeah, I thought it was a good show. I want to first mention, I also disliked at the beginning where all the wrestlers lining up there, both for COVID reasons and also because it completely kind of breaks my immersion that these guys are renegades, that they'll line up for Vince McMahon. I mean, some of them, fine, but like you have Roman Reigns out there in a suit with a very like complacent expression on his face while Vince McMahon's talking. I just rolled my eyes, and I don't know. I think that should be reserved for things like maybe like a tragedy or something, but and maybe that just sticks out to me because I watch a lot more AEW than WWE recently, but how did you feel about that?
I thought it was okay given the situation. I thought acknowledging the fans being back for the first time was a nice move. I thought Roman Reigns there in the suit was sort of, and that look that he gave, I thought that was sort of a heelish look, so I thought he stayed pretty well in character in that, and that's not easy to do in that sort of situation when you're sort of asking heels and baby faces to come out and acknowledge the crowd in a positive manner. So you got to be careful about that. I think the one thing you can question is, in a situation like this where the fans have been away and they're back for the first time, do you want to have all the wrestlers out there and do this big gesture to get the first pop? Or do you want to save that first pop for a match or a wrestler like Drew McIntyre coming out? Was his pop that he came out to for the first match affected by the fans already cheering for Vince and for the other wrestlers who came on the stage? So to me, that was more of an issue for me, and maybe it didn't have any effect, but there's certainly two schools of thought on wanting to save that first big crowd pop for maybe a wrestler versus doing this acknowledgement of fans being in the stands for the first time in a year.
Yeah, I don't mind doing an acknowledgement. I just don't – like, Vince could have just done it himself. Like, that's what I would have done. But I don't want to harp on that too much. I want to mention something else. The video package for Banks Belair I thought was a level above even what a typically good WWE video package is. And I think that they solicited probably with some outside people or probably Banks and Belair themselves, because it had a very – very different vibe to it. It reminded me of Rock versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. It had a very like sports-like build, and I didn't really see that type of build on SmackDown, right? They did a lot to erase some of the awful build-up to this match, and really anyone who wasn't following the television and only watched this video package probably had a much better overall impression of the rivalry, and that then translated into the very sport-like presentation of the match itself. Did you notice that?
Yeah, it did feel a little different. I think you're right. And I think WWE has always had a penchant for being able to mask bad storytelling with great video packages. And so, you know, I'm not sure it saved Braun Strowman versus Shane McMahon necessarily, but, you know, these video packages they put together historically have accentuated really good storylines and good feuds and made you want to see that match all the more. And they've had this way of, and I think this comes into play with Sasha and Bianca Belair, because I was not a fan of the buildup for much of it, masking the bad buildup and still making you want to see that match. So, yeah, it did have a little different feel. I thought the music was a little outside of what WWE usually does with music, for example. But I thought it just it hit the right notes that it needed to hit before this match.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if any AEW person's listening, like, that's considering that they insist on giving the Young Bucks such creative freedom, I hope they watch this video package and learn a little how to accentuate the positives.
Yeah.
I also want to mention, so the Rollins versus Cesaro match, that is a good match. I actually listened to Cesaro on Rene Packett's podcast. It's a really good listen. Really happy for Cesaro. Like you, I don't trust WWE, so I'm not going to talk about Cesaro for now. I want to focus on Seth Rollins. Where do you think he goes from here? Because frankly, if Seth wasn't so obnoxious, I'd have loved to see babyface Seth versus a heel Roman feud, because Roman, this character, is so good at playing off of history, like he did with Jey Uso. He could easily play off of history with someone like babyface Seth, or babyface Ambrose, if he was still there. But Seth cannot even smell babyface right now. So mm-hmm. And he's on SmackDown, so he's like, he is going to be a mid-carder there. He can't even touch the main event. So what do you think is the right course of action? What would you do with Seth after this feud?
I think you're right in that if they wanted him as a babyface, the time to turn him babyface was when he came back at the Royal Rumble. And they instead chose to keep him as this character, this heel character. And, you know, he's just very bland. And I don't know what the answer is, because he seems like he's too talented. I mean, this is a guy who was a hair's breadth away from being, you know, a top star, the top star on Raw for the foreseeable future. You know, he was right there, and it just didn't work out. And now he's kind of a mid-card heel doing this pretty boring gimmick. And so it's sad to see how much he's fallen, but you know, WWE is also cycles. They cycle through talent. They have one of the most talented rosters they've ever had. So not everybody can be a main eventer. And maybe this is just Seth Rollins' turn to take a back seat. And maybe, you know, a year from now, we're talking about Seth Rollins being back in the main event of WrestleMania. Who knows? But I don't think it's anything where WWE has given up on him. I don't think it's anything where they see him as, you know, less of a star than maybe they did at one other time. So I'm not, I don't think they've thrown in the towel on him for the long term. For the short term, you know, he may just not have a ton to do.
Yeah, that's a little saddening, because he can still go in the ring. He's still virtually in his prime, right? As far as Cesaro, I'm a little concerned that this might mean that Cesaro, I am more confident that he will at least get a program with Reigns, whether Daniel Bryan wins tomorrow and then Reigns beats him and then Reigns needs another babyface challenger. But I think Cesaro's kind of being groomed up for that. But then once he's fed to Reigns, I think he goes right back down to where he is. This victory does make me a little concerned that Reigns might end up pulling it off tomorrow. Do you share that concern?
Not really. I think I'm kind of in the same spot I was before this show tonight in terms of, you know, I think Reigns has a really serious shot of retaining. I think Daniel Bryan has an equal shot of winning, maybe a little less, and I think Edge would be the third sort of a dark horse in terms of winning. So I don't think anything tonight that I saw really changed my mind wholesale on the main event for tomorrow night.
Right. And my final point before I leave here, I've asked this to some of the other hosts. I've never called in to you, so I just want to ask you this. What is you know, I haven't been watching any Raw, any Monday Night Raw, and I've just been following the Orton and Fiend saga via video packages, and the horror fan in me is like, oh, this is kind of cool. I watched their pay-per-view match. I thought, you know, if I just kill my brain for a second, I can just enjoy it for what it is. I'm wondering, like, what do you think is the best – first of all, what is your impression of the rivalry? Are you more sympathetic toward these sorts of supernatural things? And what, if not, what do you think is the best case scenario to pull this match off and not sour the crowd? And where do you think the Fiend goes from here after that?
I think I am, on the whole, a little more accepting of these types of storylines. I'm a huge fan of Xia Li's storyline in NXT, which is certainly off the beaten path in terms of what you'll allow in the world of professional wrestling. I was a little more sympathetic to cinematic matches than a lot of people were. So this is not something that I dismiss out of hand. That said, this particular storyline has not, you know, been all that good, in my opinion. I think the best case scenario for the match is to do something cinematic. I think you really run the risk of dying in front of a live crowd in terms of their reaction, and you also take away a lot of what makes Fiend and Orton seem to stand out in terms of the special effects. I think that you're certainly limiting yourself if you're doing it in front of the live crowd in a wrestling ring, which, you know, a wrestling ring is almost a disappointing place for this feud to end, because you've really stretched the bounds of storytelling with it. You'd almost need to go outside of that to continue it and to really hammer it home. Where does the Fiend go from here? I think it all depends on what happens in this match. If he wins, you know, does Alexa Bliss stay with him? Does he regain his Fiend powers, or is he still a crispy, burnt Fiend? You know, if he loses, I think that does a lot of damage to the character. I guess it all depends on how he loses. And really, we don't know what this match is going to entail. So when we talk winning and losing, we're talking from a strict professional wrestling point of view, which is a pin or a submission or something like that. And we've seen in Fiend matches against Braun Strowman, for example, when he, you know, went into the water and sort of disappeared for a little while, he lost. So, like, what is even winning and losing in this match? So I think it's even hard to say where you go from here, because you don't even know what the match is going to look like. You don't know what constitutes a win or a loss in this type of match with this type of character. So this is a real, and it's, I guess it's sort of a cop-out answer, but it's really hard to predict. You know, you would think, you sort of try to pair off the Fiend in your mind with other characters who are maybe not supernatural, because there's only one Fiend, but who would fit in with the world of the Fiend. But then you look at Randy Orton and say he would be the last guy that you would think of fitting into the world of the Fiend, and here he is in this long-term feud. So even that is so hard to predict where he would go from here.
Yeah, fair point. I'm morbidly curious to see what they come up with tomorrow. But, I'll open up the phone lines now for the other callers. Thank you very much. It was good talking to you for the first time, Greg, and everyone go VIP.
Thank you, Hayden. Appreciate your call. Good to hear from you as well. Hope you call in again sometime soon. So we've got a live correspondent. Aaron is on the line. We're going to go to him in just a moment. He was there live. I want to get to another email before we do that. This is from Bobby. He says, was it just me or did the announcers struggle tonight? From Cole saying Banks kicked out when she was pinned, to Mike saying the Riot Squad had bit Mike Rome, the ring announcer. Just saying the Riot Squad had been eliminated when it was Mandy and Dana that got eliminated. Yeah, I don't know how much of that is just nerves from being in front of a crowd for the first time in a year or what it was, but yeah. And the rough part for Michael Cole, it was a very high-profile situation. And, you know, I'm sure as professional as he is, and he's someone who got a lot of flack early on in his early days, but he's someone who knows the WWE style of announcing inside and out, and he performs well within those parameters. And for him to, quite frankly, blow that call at the very end in such a major moment, in such a major match that's going to go down in both of these women's careers, I'm sure he's kicking himself for that. And so I'm not going to pile on to that. And, you know, Mike Rome, you know, with the Riot Squad call, we've seen announcers botch that sort of thing too, with when you have the convoluted type of match or rules that it has there as well. So let's go to the phones. We have Aaron on the line, who is there live in Tampa. Aaron, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Glad you could make it back and onto the show here. From a live perspective, just give me your overall thoughts on night one and anything that stands out to you from being in the crowd, any overall impressions you have.
No, I mean, the crowd was on fire from the beginning. I mean, they were just ready for Wrestling Live again. I don't know how some fans took that all the wrestlers standing on the stage part. I think some of them were kind of confused. I mean, some cheered it. I mean, when they saw Vince come out, they all cheered, obviously. So, but I mean, they were pretty much on fire from beginning to end, other than maybe the Braun Strowman Shane match. They were kind of dead during that, but they didn't even care about that match. No, other than that, the crowd was fine. Then, you know, the rain was kind of frustrating people a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Different info was getting out to people, and you know, at one point they weren't sure if they were going to delay it until 9 o'clock because that's when the rain was supposed to stop, and they let us back in, and then 5 minutes later we had to go back out again. So that was kind of frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, night one after the rain stopped, it kind of just flew right by. I mean, it was a really good time. You know, I think McIntyre and Lashley was the right call to open the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for that match, what were the reactions like live? You know, it's always hard in a stadium setting when you're watching at home because a lot of the sound goes straight up, so it's hard to really feel what the crowd reaction was. And I know going into this show, a lot of people were fearful that Drew McIntyre would get booed. What was the reaction to both of these guys? I mean, Lashley sounded like he was booed, but he got some cheers, and McIntyre sounded like he got mostly cheers. Is that about right?
That's about right. I mean, I was surprised that Lashley got as many boos as he did because Vince wanted that narrative of not having – he wanted that McIntyre to get cheered, and he did. But Lashley did get some cheers, too. He got a big pop when he came out initially. So I think the fans were kind of split on who they wanted to root for. I think they like both guys, but – and they didn't want to boo Lashley, and they didn't want to boo McIntyre either.
Mm. Who got the what was the wrestler that got the biggest pop of the night, or their most cheers, and who was the most over as a heel? Who got the most boos?
Most boos? Oh, well, I think the most over as a heel as a babyface might have been McIntyre. Actually, I know Bianca got a big pop when she came out, but I think, I know it's hard to come off on TV, as you said, when the sound goes up in the air. But as far as heels, I mean, it may have not seen that on TV, but I kind of felt Miz was getting booed a lot.
Mm.
I don't know, did that come across on TV?
Yeah, I think so. Did Bad Bunny, was he pretty over as a babyface?
Oh,
I know when you bring in celebrities, sometimes fans don't accept them, but was he pretty popular?
Oh, yeah. When his music hit and he came out, yeah, the fans were into him. And from the moment he came out to the moment the match was over, and he only, and the fact that he performed well, I think even helped him even more.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. How about Hulk Hogan? Sounded like he got his fair share of booze.
He did. You see, when his music came on, there was sort of a cheer, but then when it was over, like they did kind of boo him a little bit more, especially in my section. I can't speak for like other parts of the arena, but in the section that I was sitting in, they definitely were not pro Hogan at all.
What was your view of the ring? Tell me what section you were in. I obviously just a number doesn't help, but like how far up you were. Okay.
I was the first section from the floor. I had a clear view of the
okay.
ring, and almost a clear view of the entrance.
I know in WrestleMania's past, sometimes the set has obscured people's view. Did you get the sense that anybody's view was obscured by any part of the set tonight?
I didn't get that sense. I know in the corners, each corners, they have those big pillars. I was just to the right of those pillars. So the people that were on the left of me were probably obscured a little bit, but I didn't really notice. Well, 35, when I was in 35, I had some of the screen. I was almost on the side of the screen, or the big screen when they come out. So I was scared a little bit on that one. 33, I had a filler in my way. So this is probably, out of the three WrestleManias I've attended, this was probably the best view I've had so far.
Nice. Well, that's good to hear, and glad to hear that you had a good time. And I want to ask you about the main event, Sasha Banks versus Bianca Belair.
Yeah.
A lot of people talking about how great of a match that was. When you were in the crowd as this match was happening, was there a buzz, was there a sense from the people that you guys were watching something very special?
Not really. I think they kind of knew Bianca. I mean, maybe it's just my view of things. Maybe if somebody else called in, they would have. I mean, they were definitely cheering Bianca. They were all in there, her. One interesting, I actually emailed Jason Powell, because I was doing something for him, too, while I was at the show. When the tag match ended, the whole section on the floor, from maybe the second row back, left.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, I've seen complaints on social media the last few days of Banks not being deserving of the main event. So maybe that would have something to do with it. But I was surprised. As soon as the three count hit, it's like 200-300 people just got up in unison and left. The whole – I mean, I could have went and sat in any of those seats, and I don't think anyone would have said nothing. That was probably the shock of the night of anything, was seeing that many people leave as soon as that tag match was over.
Mm.
So I don't know. I don't know if the weather played into it or what, but I was taken aback by the. I mean, it wasn't raining at all, so I don't understand why that many people had left. And the first thing I thought of was, like I said, on social media, a lot of fans were complaining about Banks being in the main event.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that is surprising. They missed a heck of a match, I guess, if they left. The last thing I wanted to ask was about one caller had brought up earlier in the show. I know you didn't get a chance to hear it, but they had brought up how it appeared on television that the lower bowl was not really socially distanced, that it looked like there were a lot of people crammed together shoulder to shoulder. So I just want to get your impression of the protocols that were in place, either from the Raymond James Stadium or from WWE. Did it feel like people were socially distanced enough when they were in the stands? Did you sense that the large majority of fans were good about wearing masks, or did people kind of ignore that? Was there anybody, you know, working for WWE or for the stadium imploring people to put on masks if they took them off? How was that dealt with by the people there?
No, I mean, everyone had a mask. Our temperature was taken when we came in. We had to show we had to download a WrestleMania app that was created. We had to take a health questionnaire, and then we had to show them the green check mark on our phone before we even entered the stadium. Once we got in, everyone had masks. The only time that it wasn't really social distance was when the weather hit and we all had to go from the Grand Concourse. Where they serve beverages and you buy the merchandise, there was no social distancing in there at all. I mean, there was people shoulder to shoulder. I was squished up between almost two different people at the same time. So that from that standpoint, it was not social distance. When we were in the stands, it definitely was. I had my nephew next to me, and then our whole row was nothing but cardboard people. So other than being in the concourse, everything else was social distance. When the two times that we had to leave because of rain, no, it was anything but social distance. We were shoulder to shoulder. But they weren't wearing masks.
Interesting.
And they didn't hand out K95 masks at the stadium, too. So, but, yeah, everyone was good about wearing masks.
Okay, that's good to hear. Before I let you go for the night, is there anything else you want to share from your WrestleMania experience tonight?
No, I mean, it was, like I said, after the rain hit, it was once the rain was done, it was a good show, and I look forward to tomorrow night.
Excellent, and we look forward to hearing from you tomorrow night as well, so we'll be on the lookout for your call, Aaron, and hope tomorrow night is as good of a show as tonight was.
Absolutely. All right, I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Excellent. Thank you, Aaron. So glad to have a live correspondent there. We've gone without live correspondents for so long. You feel a sense of normalcy creeping back in when you get that opportunity. So we'll go to our final email for the night, and this is from Dinaz. It says, just wanted to see what you thought of the commentating tonight. I think it was pretty terrible throughout the entire show. Michael Cole even botched the final call with Sasha Banks kicked out as the ref counted to three. I can only imagine the earful he received as both he and Corey Graves went silent as Bianca's music started. Thanks for taking my email, and go VIP. Yeah, the announcing is a popular topic tonight. I think I've said what I want to say about the announcing. It's not an easy job. Plus, you know, the adrenaline of being – calling matches in front of a live crowd again and wanting to make sure that you do right by those in the ring, especially in that main event, and that pressure can get to even the most professional like people like Michael Cole. So it's unfortunate for sure, but he does it right more than he does it wrong. And that's a very difficult job to have with Vince McMahon in your ear all the time. So, I'll give him a pass on this one. I think he'll come back strong tomorrow night. And we will come back strong tomorrow night. Actually, later tonight as well, since we have crossed over into Sunday morning. So it's 1:17 a.m. Eastern here on the East Coast. So this is where we'll leave it. We will talk to you again after night two of WrestleMania. We'll be right back here taking your phone calls, taking your emails. As soon as WrestleMania night two goes off the air, we'll be getting your reaction, those avenues. And don't forget, at Greg M. Parks, you can follow along with my tweets during the show as well. So I hope you join us again tomorrow night. Thank you for joining us again tonight. If you're not a member of the PW Torch family, we'd love to have you. pwtorch.com/govip. All kinds of great audio and text this time of year, WrestleMania season. There's no better time of the year to go VIP. So I'll talk to you tomorrow night, because if it's Sunday, it is Wrestling Night in America.